You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is the 11th of September 2017. It's the anniversary of the Twin Towers, which I hadn't really even thought about until actually saying today's date. But you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm joined by Brutus Subol. Hello, Subol. Brutus, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about it either. Wow, anniversary. 9/11. There you go.
Maybe we should have put some thought into discussing that rather than what we were going to talk about this this episode. Maybe it will come up anyway. But I mean, basically, we know what happened. Muslims crashed planes
and derailed the podcast already. But maybe we should mention it.
Jews were behind it. Jews did it. And this brings me to one of the criticisms that were made of Andrew Anglin. By Vox Day in the big smackdown, which occurred on Saturday, which everyone was really looking forward to. That was one of his accusations that Andrew Anglin is lying because he says the Jews are behind everything. But they are behind everything, aren't they, really, when you think about it? Usury, they would be behind that. The immigration agenda, they're behind that. Feminism, they're behind that. If we didn't have Jews in our countries, none of the advocations for all these harmful things that are being done to us would have occurred. That's where they all originated from. So that's why you can say, well, Jews are the source of the problems, because that is where they originate from. It may not be Jews that are raping the schoolgirls in the north of England, that's Muslims, but those Muslims wouldn't be here if the Jews hadn't advocated for them to come into the country. And we would be able to bring this up and criticize them if the Jews hadn't got together with the Muslims to make hate speech illegal or criticism of Muslims illegal. So that was just one part of this podcast that we thought we really should talk about, because it is the main thing that's being talked about at the moment. And really, I mean, my first thoughts on it were that Andrew let himself down, really, because as soon as he started, he played the victim card. Why play the victim card? Surely he should have just risen above that, made a quick mention of it in a sentence, and then gone straight into saying why National Socialism is right-wing. Of course it's right-wing. It's for exactly the reasons that he stated, that it stands for hierarchy, it stands for the natural order, stands for traditionalism. And I really think he could have knocked some more holes in what Vox Day was saying than he actually did. But he was let down by a bad Skype connection. I did wonder if he had his browser open. But of course he had his browser open because he was on a Google Hangout, which is why we don't do our shows on Google Hangouts. Because if you've got a browser open, then it's going to be using up the bandwidth. But Vox Day did make himself look a complete nutter plonker by the end of it, when he was talking about suing Andrew Tauber. And the guy was just basically looking for publicity, I think. He's some kind of publicity whore that was just trying to latch on to Andre's success and try and grab some of it for himself. But besides that, the guy is a mestizo. Why are we even listening to him? He's not white. He's not one of us. Looking around the alt-right, I'm thinking, well, we've got the alternative right, we've got the alternative light, and we've got an alternative white. We've got non-whites that it seemed to have infected the movement, that seemed to be given a voice, and people are paying attention to them. I mean, really, why listen to somebody who isn't white? They cannot advocate for us. They might around the edges, but as soon as it gets down to it, as soon as you point out the fact that they are a living example of everything that we are trying to prevent, white people genociding themselves by breeding with non-whites, then they're going to get offended. And what I see is these non-whites that are in the alt-right, as far as I can see, they're just in it because they want to get white women. Or there are non-white women that want to get white men. And the ones that are in the movement have got white partners, which is wrong. I haven't seen Vox Day's wife, but I make a bet that she's white. and he isn't. And that means that his partner has destroyed her genome in those children. I really don't, really do not think we should be allowing these people into the movement. If they want to advocate for us among their own people, great, that's wonderful. Why isn't he in Mexico? Why isn't he standing up for mestizos and non-whites and saying to them, hey, look, you know, don't have a go at the whites. The whites have done loads of great good for us. But he isn't. He's pretending to be white. He's pretending to advocate for the alt-right. And he's nothing to do with it. And I think this podcast just, you know, this is a lesson in why we shouldn't trust non-whites and why we can't have them in our movement. So that was really what I took away from that. And that's what I was putting in the chat room the whole time is, what, why is anyone paying attention to this guy? He isn't white. He's not one of us. But I saw one message on Gab, somebody else saying that, which I thoroughly approved of. And I'm sure there are others that have said that. But I really do think we need to purge the alt-right of people that aren't white, because they have no business advocating for us. They should be advocating for their own people. If they're advocating for us, they are traitors to their own people. And to be a traitor is not a good trait. It's not a good character trait. And I think you could see that with this Fox Day. I mean, he dreadful character, the things he was saying and the things that he's done. Not somebody that, not somebody I really wanted to be listening to. And the only reason I was listening to it is because he was debating Andre, which, as I say, that he's a publicity whore. That's what he was doing. What are your views on it, Brutus? I know you've watched it more recently than me.
I actually didn't finish watching the whole thing. I only watched half of it. I'll probably watch it after this. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't even think he was in the alt-right. I thought he was just an alt-light type guy. I didn't think anybody had ever accepted him as part of the alt-right. I don't know. Maybe I missed that. I think, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he has been defining himself as alt-right. But I don't think anybody really takes him seriously. I mean, if this guy is going online and he's saying that, you know, Hitler was, and the National Socialist movement was left-wing, then he's obviously a bit of a plonker, isn't he? I mean, I don't know anybody that says that. This is like a typical straw man argument, which is used by classical libertarians and conservatives and conservatives and this type of thing. They use this argument to Hitler as a left winger so that they don't have to, I suppose, engage in him or debate what he did and why he did it, etc., etc. They just dismiss it like that. And it appears to be what Vox Dei is trying to do with Anglin. He's basically trying to say, Hitler was a left winger, and therefore Andrew Anglin is a left winger, and the Daily Stormer is rubbish, and you should just ignore it. So it's just another kind of convoluted tone police kind of thing. I mean, I don't think anybody takes him seriously. Maybe people on the fringes of the movement take him seriously. But I think the debate is good. I'm glad that Tara's doing these things. I always appreciate debate and conflict, and I hope that we have more of them, because it's just, well, first of all, it's entertaining, and we have to remember that we kind of are entertainment. I mean, that's classic a Saul Alinsky concept, that, you know, the revolution has to be fun. So it's kind of fun to watch these debates. I mean, people do enjoy it. It was fun watching Beardson Beardley having his his debate with the Goyim goddess. And it was kind of fun. The Vox Dei Greg Johnson wasn't that much fun, but the Greg Johnson Andrew Anglin debate was fun. And I think it's good. I think the debates are good. I think the conflict is good. I'm all in favor of punching right and constructive criticism. In regard to the central question, is Hitler left wing? Well, it seems quite obvious that Hitler was in favor of the patriarchy. He was in favor of, you know, fascist dictatorship, or whatever kind of dictatorship you want to call it, military dictatorship. He was in favor of the death penalty. He was in favor of the right to bear arms. He was against homosexuality. He supported the family, and he supported his race. So he's pretty right-wing. The idea that he's left-wing because he's socialist, and that collectivism is some kind of left-wing philosophy is a bit, you know, it's a little bit weak, to be honest, because the socialism within Nazi Germany was not like the socialism that we have today. And really, I think if you go back and you looked at medieval Europe, you could probably argue that that was a form of socialism. For the Germans and for Hitler, it just meant looking after your people. I don't like to call myself a socialist because it's got bad connotations, and we've seen what the welfare state has done to this country. So I don't call myself a national socialist. But I don't know. I don't think you're going to find something. I think what you have shades of right and shades of left. You know, you're not going to find a government that's 100% right wing. You're going to find little problems here and there. Yes, perhaps the socialist aspect of Nazi Germany was a little bit left wing. But I mean, if you compare that to the fact that it's an incredibly highly masculine military dictatorship, you know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's just only an idiot would really argue that kind of thing. And it just goes to show, I think Andrew Anglin made this point quite well, that these people, these classical libertarians, which is what I'm assuming that Vox Dei is, they believe that individualism is the right wing and that collectivism is the left wing. And it's a huge mistake, because this individualism just leads to the atomization of society, a complete society breakdown, so that you can get taken over by the Jews. This is exactly what the Jews want. I mean, this is classic Kevin MacDonald's culture of critique analysis of group evolutionary theory. If you have a group which doesn't have a strong group identity, if it has a very individualistic identity, then another group with a cohesive, strong group identity can enter into that group and take it over. And that is exactly what the Jews have done to us. And in fact, it's what increasingly other ethnic groups are doing to us, like Muslims and Mexicans and et cetera, et cetera. So Vox Dei is, you know, doubly proved that he does not understand this fact. He doesn't understand the JQ. And I think he's just embarrassed himself. But I think it's fun. I mean, I like watching the alt-right knock these people down. You know, it's, Richard Spencer started it with Hailgate. Got rid of Paul Joseph Watson, and then after that we had what was that thing called, the Deplorable, that got rid of Mike Cernovich, and Charlottesville exposed a few others, and now with the banning of the Daily Stormer, Stefan Molyneux has finally started to be exposed. I mean, I haven't liked him for a long time, but you know, people are finally starting to realize, well, this guy's just bogus, because he all about free speech, but he doesn't defend the Daily Stormer when he gets kicked off the internet. So I'm actually very happy to see these charlatans just getting knocked down one by one. I think it's very entertaining.
Yeah, I think he really makes the same mistake that so many make when they look at the word National Socialism and they see that it's got socialism in it, and so they think, oh, well, that must be communism. But really, you can't have nationalism without socialism. Because nationalism means that you do everything that you possibly can for the nation, for the ethnic nation, and that's the entire ethnic nation. That's whether it's the young, whether it's the old, whether it's the low IQ, whether it's the high IQ, the workers out in the fields or the scientists, everyone. And it means looking after everyone and doing the best for everyone in that nation. So it's looking at the nation as a unit. Even though it's made up of individuals, it's looking at the nation as a unit, which is socialism, really. And when you say that it's the ethnic nation that matters, then it's the people in it that matters. It's the bloodline in it that matters. And the opposite way of looking at it is to look at it as the individual, and the individual takes whatever he can for himself, but whatever he is taking, he's taking it from somebody else. And when you've got a nation and everyone's working for the good of that nation, then everybody in there is doing the best that they can, and what everybody is taking has been willingly given to them by everybody else around them. So you've got a positive feedback loop, And you know, the way I see it, the dichotomy between right and left, the right is what is right and what is correct. And the political right today is not correct. It's not correct living. But the alternative right, the principles that it claims to stand by, they are on the side of right. They are on the side of truth. So, you know, things have got so bad now that we're having to call what is right the alternative right, because what we're told is right by the government is actually what is wrong. And a couple of things you brought up there, and I think you're right, the constructive criticism, we do need to make constructive criticism of people. And, you know, it can be done in a joking way. It doesn't need to be done in a nasty way at all. And that, if you compare that debate with Vox Dei to the debate that was with Greg Johnson, as Andre said, the debate with Greg Johnson was in good faith. That was the difference, and that was a really good debate. I enjoyed listening to that, and you got a lot of information from that and a lot of ideas, and it was good to listen to. It was edifying to listen to. With this debate with Vox Dei, that wasn't held in good faith. And I, you know, the reason for that is that the guy wasn't white. He's not white, and he's pretending to be white. And you brought up Tara there, and she seems to be doing a lot of good. She seems to be facilitating a lot of us to doing a hell of a lot of work with these podcasts. I have to say she's doing good work with that. But again, you know, she says that she's part Indian and part Jewish. And this hasn't been addressed. I have yet to see her do anything harmful, but that's still a fact there. And, you know, I'm worried that something will happen in the future, because that is what happens when we have non-whites in the movement. I'm sorry to say it, because she does seem to do a lot of good, and she interviews people and she gives a platform to people, and I hope she continues to do that. But there's still that worry there, you know, because I know that she'll be looking for a white boyfriend, not an Indian. And once it comes to that point, that's when it all starts to fall down. I really don't want to knock the girl, and I don't want this to seem like I am knocking her, because she's doing a good job. But I would like to see her address that at some point. The fact that she isn't white, so, you know, how come she's advocating for white people? And how does she square that up in her mind? And I really don't want this to appear as if I'm knocking her. And if I'm wrong about this, then, you know, she should say about it and make it clear. Because I was looking up just some stuff on Google Images, and these tweets come up that apparently were sent by her. And I don't know whether they were or not, saying that she is part Jewish and she is part Indian. Okay, if she is like that, then, you know, surely she should be saying, and I've got a part Indian boyfriend, or I've got a mixed race boyfriend. But, and I understand that this isn't something that you want to wish on any children. You wish for them to have a proper ancestry and to look like their ancestors. And that's why I'm advocating for this. And that would be great. But what I wouldn't like to hear is, yes, I'm advocating for whites and I've got a white boyfriend, because that means she's just going to do the same to her children. Do you see what I mean, Supal? I know you support her, and maybe you have a different view on this to me.
Oh, well, I mean, I do have a different view, and I don't. I mean, my opinion is basically that, you know, first of all, we need to get rid of the Jews, first of all, and then after that, we need to get rid of the Muslims and the blacks and the other, how to say, pure breed non-whites, if you like. And once we've got rid of all them, then, you know, we can deal with Tara McCarthy. I just don't really see her as a threat. I do 100% appreciate what you're saying about racial purity. Obviously, for example, blonde hair, blue eyes, these are recessive genes. If you mix, you know, your blood with Negro blood, you're going to lose the blue eyes, you're going to lose the blonde hair. And I would like to see in the future, after we've won this war, I would like to see a system of eugenics set up whereby, you know, you encourage white people to marry white people. I just don't see the half castes as the enemy per se. And the thing is, I really have a broader perspective on this, because the way I see it, Europe and America are still the most powerful. I mean, Europe's not a nation, but you know what I mean. The two most powerful political entities in the world. The combined economic worth of these two countries is something around about a third or even half of the total gross domestic product of the world. America obviously has the most powerful military in the world. It's got 100 military bases all around the world. Then, of course, you have, you know, Canada and Australia. So we, the European nations, the white nations, are still very, very powerful from a military perspective. We have not really lost any of that after the collapse of our empires after the Second World War. So the point I'm driving at is, once we get rid of the Jewish influence and we kick all these non-whites out of our nations, this is obviously going to be a, you know, it's not like it's going to happen in Europe and not happen in America. It will be a universal thing. Once this happens, we are going to be basically in charge of this planet again. We already are really in charge of the planet. It's just we've got this parasite leeching off us. So my point is that in regard to Tara McCarthy and in regard to other half-caste people, you know, we can find them a place to live. You know, we could just barge down into Africa, conquer. Well, we don't even have to conquer. We could just buy it off them, like the Louisiana contract, buy a chunk of land. I'm sure we could buy a chunk of land the size of Wales down there for nothing. You know, it's a big continent. It's big and empty. Buy a chunk of land and put these people down there. They can have their own nation and be with their own kind and with their own people. And maybe that some people would think that sounds cruel. I don't know. I think it sounds kind of a kind way to deal with it. So what I'm trying to say is that when I look at the white race, I don't see a single race. I see a collection of many different clans. You have the Nordic blonde hairs. You have the Gaelic with their red hair. You have the different, you know, you have the Slavics and et cetera, et cetera. You have the Spanish. They're kind of, you know, mixed with Muslim blood. The Italians, they got a lot of Negro blood in them. So you've got different clans. And I am perfectly willing to ally myself with these people. And once we've won this war, that, like I say, the world will be our oyster and we can part ways and they can have their own nation. And I think we'll all be very happy with that.
Yeah, so kind going with kind. And I must, you know, I do have to say, I think she has said that if it comes down to it, then yeah, she would go back off to India if there was a white ethnostate and there wasn't a place for her. I think she has said that. What I'm just concerned about is any children. If she, you know, if she ends up with a white boyfriend and does the same to her children, and that white, or rather that white boyfriend does the same to his children, that's what I'm concerned about. Is people with mixed blood, if they want to advocate for us, great, but really they need to let us know that they are seeking a partner that's also with mixed blood. And they're not just getting involved in white nationalism because they want to find a white partner. That's the bit that concerns me. It's the next generation. It's the children, and that being done to the children. That's always been the worry that I have about this. The idea of giving them their own country, giving them their own place to be. Well, yeah, obviously that's nationalism, isn't it? You know, we're not saying we want something for ourselves that we don't want for other people. We want everyone to be able to live with their own people and with their own kind and to be able to express themselves in the way that their people wish to express themselves and be able to understand one another. We don't want it to be like London where you walk down the street and just hear all these different languages and don't understand what anyone is saying. I mean, surely that isn't going to be any good for someone who's Indian or African either. They want to be hearing people speak in their own language with the same body language and the same customs. It's just common sense, really. You really would think that people would have more common sense. I mean, the other thing that I wanted to really talk about this week sort of hinges upon that, and this is this inability for people to see that racism is just a complete load of nonsense. And I've come to the realization that Negroes themselves don't understand what racism is. Whenever I see Negroes interviewed about it and they're asked to whether blacks could be racist, they can never understand the question. They always come out with something like, well, Black Lives Matter or slavery. And Black Lives Matter in itself is racist. It is showing discrimination in favor of blacks. So it's a explicitly racist statement. And yet blacks will come out with it and say, Black Lives Matter. Look at the way whites persecute blacks. When you ask them whether it's possible for blacks to be racist, Now, the reason for this, I think, is because it is such common sense that people prefer their own kind and are going to discriminate in favour of their own kind. Blacks do this all the time. So the idea that racism could actually be discriminating in favour of your own kind, I don't think blacks could ever admit that, because that would mean admitting that's what they do, because everybody does it. It's just common sense. And this week we've had, or last week rather, we've had David Lammy doing a report, this black MP from London, doing a report into so-called racism in the criminal justice system. And the figures that he's come up with are just incredible. And he says young blacks are 9 times more likely to be locked up in England and Wales than their white peers. The proportion of black youth prisoners rose from 25% in 2006 to 41% last year. And don't forget that they're less than 10% of the country are these blacks, and yet they're 40% of the prisoners. Now, they are saying that this is because white people are racist, and yet when you look at women make up 50% of the population, but they only make up 3% of the people in prison. And we say, well, that's because women are less likely to commit crime. But as soon as you're looking at Negroes, oh no, you can't say that they're more likely to commit crimes. It must be because white people are terribly racist. And you've got more figures he's come up with. Black boys are more than 10 times as likely as white boys to be arrested for drug offences. And instead of the common sense thing, which would be to think, well, blacks are obviously 10 times more likely to be involved in drugs then. No, apparently this is racism. These police just going out there, picking on these blacks and planting drugs on them or something. I mean, because there's a victim for most of these crimes, especially the violent ones, that there's always a victim there. Especially if these Negroes have been jailed for it, then there's always going to be a victim, probably someone who's been severely hurt by them. And yet, apparently, we're supposed to just think that the reason for this is all because of racist whitey. Now, some of the things that he's calling for here, he's saying we need an ethnically representative judiciary and magistrates, which means highly educated people. Blacks have a low IQ, so they're really not going to be very good as judges and magistrates. And the ones that we have had usually end up getting the sack due to corruption. The first black female, she ended up having to leave due to corruption. And it tells you some figures here. It says there's 6% blacks in the prison service, 7% in the judiciary, 11% among magistrates, and 19% in the Crown Prosecution Service. 19% in the Crown Prosecution Service. Well, now we know why crimes against white people don't get investigated and hate crimes do get investigated. Criticism of Negroes and criticism of Jews does get investigated because 1 in 5 of the people in the CPS are non-whites. And they're only supposed to be 10% of the population, yet you've got almost 20% in the Crown Prosecution Service. And Lammy is asking for more. He's also said that the word gang is being used instead of group in discussions about crime. And this tips off people that it's blacks that are involved. But the reason why it tips off people that it's blacks that are involved if it's gangs is because 34% of the pre-sentence reports on Negroes find that they're involved with gangs, and only 5% from people from white ethnic backgrounds. So the fact that they say gangs, and then people think, well, it must be a black guy. That's because blacks are involved in gangs. It's not because the people are being racist and are going after them just because they don't like the colour of their skin. He's also saying that Negroes that plead guilty, they should be let off, plead innocent rather, and say not guilty. They should not be penalised for that, whereas whites will be penalised if they say they're not guilty and they're found guilty, because apparently all these Negroes will always claim to be innocent. That's because they don't know the difference between lying and telling the truth. So they will always bet that they will get off if they say they're not guilty. So he's saying that Negroes that say not guilty, they shouldn't be punished for that. Negroes should have their criminal records wiped because they're unable to get jobs afterwards. Nowhere in this report, nowhere at all, is there any mention of the higher rate of crime that these Negroes are committing in order for them to be sentenced like this. And yet you would think that that was just common sense. And in everything else that we look at, like women that get sent to prison, we say, well, that's because less women commit crimes. That's why less women are in prison. Yet as soon as it's blacks that we're talking about, we're supposed to completely suspend all our powers of logic and detection and just think that this is because of this nasty white guy. I just cannot understand why white people can't see this. And when you see the blacks that are interviewed on it, like last week there was a talk show with Matthew Wright, and he was talking about the fact that scientists have now proven that every single race is racist. Every single race is racist. And he was asking this black guy about this and saying, well, are blacks racist? What does racism mean? And this Negro just couldn't answer him. He said, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. And just saying Black Lives Matter proves that the Negro was racist himself. And yet he couldn't see that. Because being racist is the natural default position to want to be with your own people. And I think blacks know that they want to be with their own people. So if that's what racism means, it can't be. That can't be what racism means. Racism has got to mean the whitey is the bad guy. That's the only thing racism could mean. Otherwise, blacks would be racist as well. And I think this is the logic that goes around in their minds. Because I have yet to see any Negro talking reasonably about racism and what racism actually is. They just see it as a way to get things out of white people. They don't actually understand what it is. And white people ourselves, if only we really understood what it was, then we would throw all this stuff out. Everything, all of these race laws, these racism crimes, racially aggravated crimes, all of that, it's just absolute nonsense. Everybody prefers to be with their own kind. It's the natural position. And to make it illegal is completely nonsensical. And that's why we come out with nonsense like this David Lammy report. Just incredible. Hopefully it's going to wake people up. I mean, this talk show last week, this Matthew Wright talk show, I mean, he almost talked himself into realizing it when he mentioned about only 3% of women being in prisons, only 3% of them. So he almost worked it out for himself. But when somebody called in and said, for every one of these crimes, there's a victim, he said, oh, what is it then? Blacks are evil, are they? Are blacks evil? And that's the mentality of people. When you try and say, well, yes, actually, they are 10 times more likely to commit violent crimes than whites are, people think you're saying they're evil. We're not saying they're evil. We're just saying that they're a different subspecies to whites and they have a different character on average than whites do. Obviously, you get exceptions to the rule that don't behave like that. But if you take the average, then you end up with them being 10 times more likely to commit violent crimes. And this report by David Lammy, that's what this report confirms. It certainly doesn't confirm that there's racism. It just confirms that blacks are far more likely to commit crimes than whites. Madness. Brutus, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, hopefully there's a silver lining on this whole thing and in that perhaps, yeah, I mean, at least they recorded the race crime statistics. I mean, at least they did that. They've obviously put the reached the wrong conclusion, and they're going to try and use it for something malefic. They want to, you know, use it for affirmative action into the police force, which is, of course, the most dangerous form of affirmative action. But, well, at least they did the study. I mean, one of the big problems that is faced, that we face, is that in a lot of cases, people don't even do the study, right? So you don't even know what's going on. This is a problem in many countries. So I suppose at least they did the study. Now we've got the statistics and we can quote them. We can use the Lammy report for our own purposes. But, yeah, I mean, as to why, it's Marxism. We're following, the people of this country are following a Jewish religion called Marxism, and specifically the Frankfurt School variant of this religion. And this religion claims, you know, it's not based on reality. It's based on a false ideology. And it claims that, those who do not have power are victims. And you can only be racist if you are in power. And you can't be racist if you're not in power. And therefore, blacks can't be racist. It's, of course, actually a total lie, because the system, even by its own standard, even by the standard of the cultural Marxists, it's a lie, because the blacks are protected by the system. So actually they are in power and the whites aren't. We're the victims. But of course they can't see that. they're insincere, and people are stupid, unfortunately. I think I don't want to quote Winston Churchill, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's a good one. And I use it on normies all the time. But he did say that the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with your average man on the street. And unfortunately, he's right.
Well, yeah, he is. I mean, it's always the majority that are less informed and the minority that are always well informed on things. That's the whole point of an elite, is a minority that have high IQs, that are very good at what they do, and they're the people that we want doing the, you know, running the country, really. And in the police force and in the judges and the magistrates, we don't want affirmative action in there. We certainly don't want blacks to not have to disclose their criminal records when they apply to join the police, because otherwise we won't be able to get our 10% of the police force all Negro, because 90% of Negroes have got a criminal record. That's been suggested as well, that blacks don't have to declare their criminal record when they apply to join the police. When you were talking about the conclusions there, this happens so many times. They will come out with something to prove racism, and actually, no, it doesn't prove racism. It proves the complete opposite. It proves that what we are saying is correct. And we are lucky that they've actually done this study, because in Sweden they won't do anything like that. They won't talk about the ethnicity of the offenders in any way. You actually have to look down at the names to see how many of them are Muslims. But this is something that they're trying to change now. They're trying to say that people shouldn't have to give their names when they're applying for jobs, because there's this implicit bias that people will have against Muslims or against blacks, and it's nonsense. People look at the merits and look at the exam results. That would really be all you'd have to look at with Negroes, is their exam results, to see that you would rather employ a white person than a low IQ Negro. But no, it's got to be racism, so they're going to remove the names from these people so we can't tell who they are by their names, which, as you say, it just shows that they're the ones that are in the privileged position. They're the ones that are being protected. They're the ones that are being given a leg up. And the whites are the ones that are being persecuted for this and being given this guilt complex for treating them badly. Anyway, I don't know if you want to add any more to that or move on to Heather Hyers. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the things that have been happening after Charlottesburg, Brutus.
Yeah, I found a new... She's not a YouTuber. She's a bit shooter. So I don't know what we call that. I always think bitch shoots quite
shooter.
Funny.
A bitch shooter.
Yeah, well, it is bitch, isn't it? B-I-T-C-H, you know. Yeah. And I'm not calling her a bitch, but, you know, she's a bitch shooter. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, I like to keep my eyes on the alt-right girls and what they're doing. I think it's my duty to do so. So anyway, there's a new bitch shooter. Her name's Lauren Rose. She's a cutie. And yeah, she just did a video about the Heather Heyer thing, so I'll give her a shout out. It's very interesting. Obviously, Heather Heyer is the girl who supposedly, we all assumed that she got hit by the car driven by James Fields in the Charlottesville incident. Apparently, though, it turns out that she may not have been hit by the car. As we all know, Andrew Anglin got kicked off the internet for making fun of her. What's her name? Emily Ukas. She posted a funny meme called, was it Tinder Expectations versus Reality, with this picture of a younger picture of Heather Hayes, and you can only see her face, and then it's got the picture of this fat girl getting hit by the car. And it's, anyway, it's a pretty funny meme. And that was the meme that sparked the whole controversy on Gab, which was going on last week, whether they were trying to kick Andrew Anglin off Gab. No, they wanted him to take the meme off. Anyway, apparently she's not that girl. Okay, so if you know the meme I'm talking about, I'm sure you all do. The fat girl in the like green blue thing or whatever that's going over the car. That's not her at all. Heather Hayes was dressed in black, and she didn't even get hit by the car. She was on the side of the street. Now, this isn't 100% confirmed, but they have you know, 4chan's going over the data right now, and they've looked like where she fell and where the lampposts were, and they're going over the image, and it looks pretty much 95% certain she didn't even get hit by the car. What happened is she had a heart attack, or people were getting out of the way, she got pushed over, fell to the ground, had a heart attack, and that is what killed her. So this whole, you know, media narrative of James Fields running over Antifa and killing this poor innocent lady is not really true. She's fat, she was overweight, she was a smoker, and she had a bit of a fright, and she had a heart attack. Now, can you argue that it's still James Fields' fault or not? Well, it'd be difficult to argue not. I mean, he did run into all those people, but it definitely would not be a murder charge. It would be something else, something like manslaughter or something like that. So, you know, anyway, that's just an interesting turn of events in that story. Also interesting to know that apparently James Fields has schizophrenia. Actually, you know, to be honest, not that I want to not defend him. I mean, we still haven't got to the bottom of it, so we don't really know what happened. It's quite possible that he just got, you know, the people attacking his car and he just freaked out and put his foot on the pedal. But not that I don't want to defend him. I don't really believe in these mental illness things, schizophrenia and this and that and blah, blah, blah. A lot of these things are made up by the American Medical Association, you know, by the psychiatric community, just to give them an excuse to, you know, peddle people with drugs. In the times of King Arthur, they didn't have these mental definitions. They would just say somebody's crazy or they're bad. So anyway, I'm very skeptical about the scientific validity of different, you know, mental illnesses like schizophrenia and so on and so forth. But anyway, the legal system does believe in these kinds of definitions. So apparently James Fields is schizophrenic. And yeah, he didn't even hit Heather Heyer. She was just some fat girl standing on the side of the road who had a heart attack.
Well, what happened there? I mean, I saw a link and it said Heather Heyer's mother said that she died of a heart attack. And I thought, well, it's entirely possible that she did die of a heart attack and she was run over as well. And the heart attack happened after. And when they did the autopsy and they say reason for death, instead of saying squashed by a car, it says heart attack brought on after being squashed by a car. Because who is the fat girl with the blubber that we saw? Because I've also seen the pictures of a girl dressed in black and it says, oh, well, that's Heather Heyer. But I couldn't really positively identify her as Heather Heyer, and I couldn't really identify the blubber that got squashed between the two cars as Heather Heyer either. I mean, we're just having to rely on the media for telling us that. We do know that this event happened. Faith Goldie was there. She was filming it, and others were there. I think what happened was people attacked this guy's car. They smashed the back of it, and he instantly panicked, drove forwards, and then when they attacked him again, he just reversed back. And whoever was in between those two cars got squashed. So even though it says that she died of a heart attack, I still think, you know, she may well have got squashed between the two cars as well. But instead of surviving it, she had a heart attack due to the shock of it. Do you know any more details to it? Can you expand on that a bit or answer any of my queries there?
Yeah, the girl... in the meme is not Heather Heyer. Heather Heyer, they have a photo of her and she was wearing black. So that girl with it's like a green or blue shirt. The girl in the famous meme by Emma Yucas, that is not Heather Heyer. She was wearing black. And like I say, there's a slow motion video and they're pretty sure that she was standing on the side of the road, but it's not certain yet. It's 95% certain. Andrew Anglin has been following this story for a week now, asking for the autopsy. Why haven't the police released the autopsy to confirm the cause of death? If the mass media is pushing the impression that she died because of being hit by a car. Andrew was saying it was heart attack. And then, yeah, Heather Heyer's mum came out and admitted on TV that it was a heart attack. So I think it looks like she was standing on the side of the road. The car crash happened. Everybody fell over because people were trying to get out of the way. She got pushed over and she just had a heart attack.
So the whoever was wearing the green, the beached whale.
Somebody else.
Somebody else, and she's probably okay.
I guess so.
Because they would be saying that she was the one that died, wouldn't she? If she was injured. I'd like to know what people that were actually there, the eyewitnesses, what they think of all this. I'd like to know what Faith Goldie thinks of it. And she was the one that filmed it, wasn't she? Wasn't it her film that the mainstream media companies used when they showed us this? So
there's several different video angles. But, I mean, they're all unreliable. I mean, they're all Antifa, aren't they? So what are they going to say?
It's a mystery.
You know, I'm sure some of them know the secret, but they haven't been coming out and saying it.
It was all crisis actors. I've heard people say that it was all crisis actors. It was all staged way over the top, especially when we know people that were actually there. I'm sure there were agent provocateurs there. I mean, that guy walking around with the swastika flag that had just been unfolded, hadn't even been ironed, the one swastika flag on his own, I think that's highly suspicious. You know that there are going to be provocateurs there, but to say that it was all crisis actors, that's just not possible. Not the logistics of something like that are just not possible. And what would be the point in doing that? And, you know, Antifa, you can get them for free. You don't have to pay them to do that. And nationalists, we were there to hear speeches. We were there to make our presence felt and to say that we want to protect these statues and speak to the people and take a stand completely legally. Everybody else was there illegally. I think it's a bit shameful, these attacks on Jason Kessler. I think people should really be supporting him. I think he sent a tweet out mocking Heather Heyer or something. Okay, maybe that's in bad taste, but don't throw him under the bus. I mean, if it wasn't for him, he would, you know, the event wouldn't have happened. And as far as I can see, it's pretty decent of him, considering he's just, he just wants to see the immigration reform going back to what it was in the 60s. And yet he was quite happy to invite along traditional Workers' Party, League of the South, and all the more explicitly racial groups that were there. He was quite happy to have them alongside him. So I don't like the way that people have thrown him under the bus. He seems like a fairly decent chap to me, even though he doesn't agree with all our positions. You know, I think we've got to support the people that help us out, like him. So, that's just my...
I got to jump in there and say I 100% agree with you there, Sven. And it's really, really dumb, because if we throw him under the bus, then who's going to want to work with the alt-right, right? You know, something goes wrong and we just ditch them. Complete lack of loyalty. And I actually made a post on my blog saying Jason Kessler did nothing wrong. But you want to stand by people that stand by you. And if you don't do that, then nobody's going to want to work with you, and nobody's going to want to help you with your demonstration, and nobody's going to want to work with the alt-right. So that's just dumb. Yep.
Definitely. There's something else you wanted to bring up as well. Before we finish the podcast, we've got another 10 minutes to go. Can you want to talk a bit about Afghanistan or poppy growing or something?
Well, yeah, I'm ripping off Lauren Rose's content. So no, but she was just pointing out that I mean, I knew this already, but it just brought it to mind that you know, she was just talking about the Afghan war and Trump sending troops over to there. And yeah, basically it's all about the opium. That's what it's about. That's what the original Afghanistan war was all about. The Taliban, they started burning the opium fields and stopping people from selling opium, which in turn gave an excuse for America to invade. America invaded, the opium trade goes back up again. And Donald Trump, he's sending more troops out there. It's that's where they're making their money. I mean, she pointed out this, that we've spent $800 billion or America has spent $800 billion on Afghanistan. I mean, how long have we been there for? 10 flipping years? More than that? 15 years? And the country still hasn't got its, you know, it's a joke. So with the America's poured in $800 billion into this country, but I can pretty much guarantee you the Jews have probably made $800 billion worth of money out of all the opium and the heroin that's produced by it. And it is quite an interesting dynamic, considering that, you know, the Jews get to kill us in two ways. First of all, they send our boys over to Afghanistan to get shot by Taliban soldiers. And then the heroin that's produced by the poppies in Afghanistan, they get sold to white boys back in America and kill them there. And it's just your classic Jewish poison the nation tactic, your classic Jewish opium war tactic. This was something which was pushed forward, of course, by the Jewish family, the Sassoon family, the original guy. He was born in Baghdad. He was the court Jew for Baghdad. He was a Sephardic Jew. He got kicked out of Baghdad because of corruption. He went to Bombay. From Bombay, he started getting involved in the opium trade, selling opium to the Chinese. The Chinese shut it down. So then, you know, the Jews, they got their Rothschild-controlled British Empire to start a war with the Chinese. That was the Opium War of 1850. We went in there, we blew them up. We got Hong Kong, and we used Hong Kong as a platform to, you know, poison that entire ancient and powerful nation. The Jews just poisoned it, got inside it, opened it all up, poisoned them with the drugs, built a criminal empire. And then what happens, you know, 50 or 60 years later, you have a communist revolution and all the pain and suffering that goes with it. So it's basically the Jews are drug dealers, and that's why we're in Afghanistan.
Yeah, Dr. Johnson thinks that there's a link with Burma, because Burma used to be part of the Golden Triangle. It used to be Burma that was the center of the drugs trade. And Afghanistan, the Taliban did away with it all. And then when they got rid of the Taliban, Afghanistan came forward again as the center of the drug trade. And the Burmese military put a stop to it in Burma. And now that Aung San Suu Kyi was put in, he thinks that they're trying to prime Burma to start producing the heroin again. But what I don't understand is they make all this heroin from opium poppies, but they can make far stronger synthetic opioids in synthetic versions. So why do they bother with all this farming of these huge fields and all those risks when they can just make these synthetic versions? This synthetic stuff, this fentanyl, which is thousands of times more potent, that they mix in with it, that actually kills a lot of people in America. I don't know if we have a problem with it over here in Britain yet, but it has killed a lot of people in America. But you would think that these drug gangs would just make the synthetic stuff, and that would be a lot cheaper and a lot easier just to get some lab in China to produce it, rather than buying all these opium poppies. And the other thing that has been suggested is that because the medical industry still does, obviously they use morphine and heroin, dimorphine. They use these synthetic versions that they can make, but they could still make it from the opium, and they could buy all the opium poppies legally, all the opium that Afghanistan could produce, and then they could use that to turn it into morphine and dimorphine and use it medically. And then there would be no heroin on the streets, because the entire opium crop would have been used to produce the legal medical stuff that's needed with people with severe chronic pain near the end of their lives, and cancer patients and people that need it medically. And then that would instantly, it would be removed from everywhere, because the whole crop would have been bought legally. So why doesn't that happen? The reason why that doesn't happen is because there's so much money to be made from it illegally. I mean, they were making a fortune from it back when it was legal, and the Sassoons were doing it, but they must have, you know, it must be 10, 20 times the amount of money they were making originally, once the drug was made illegal. Plus then you've got people selling it and trying to get people hooked on it so that they can make the money for themselves. And since they made these drugs illegal, the usage of them has gone through the roof. You look at in the 1920s and the 1930s, heroin and cocaine were legal, and there wasn't anywhere near a problem like we have today, and certainly not all the problems that surround it, the crime that surrounds it, the people committing burglaries and muggings so that they can pay for their fix for a day, when really what they've got is a medical problem. And they shouldn't even have that medical problem if these drugs had been kept legal in the first place. I think if you go back to the 60s in Britain, heroin was still legal, and there was a few thousand addicts, and that was it in the entire country. And now they've got hundreds of thousands, and thousands of deaths that have occurred from people overdosing, from not knowing what it is that they're actually taking. It's caused a lot of problems. So, there's lots of questions that you can ask about this, the drug industry, and about Afghanistan and what we're doing over there, and how it's linked in with Burma, and the problems that we have with the white working class, especially in America, that seem to be being ripped apart by these synthetic drugs. And the problem is, I think, is if the doctors stop giving them their synthetic heroin, their fentanyl, or whatever it is, the hydrocodone, whatever they get over there, once the doctors stop giving them that because there's a clampdown, then they go and buy the stuff illegally on the streets, and they end up overdosing, and they end up selling it to other people because they have to pay for their own fix. So, I'm a supporter of giving, if people have a medical problem, which addiction is, addiction and dependence, then they should, they should be helped medically rather than just be left to become a part of a criminal underworld. It's a hard thing to look at. And I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize so much, they say, oh, well, cannabis isn't, it's proved that it's not really a gateway to these other drugs. Well, it might not be a gateway to it, but if you're involved in buying illegal cannabis, you're going to come across people that are selling harder drugs, and then you could end up with drugs that cause these problems with addiction and dependence, and it will all come about through mixing with people that are going to sell you that just through the softer drugs like cannabis. I do think a lot of problems have been caused by making it illegal, and a lot of people have made a lot of money from it, and it's the Jews that are at the center of that. They're at the center of the ecstasy trade as well. Back in the 80s and the 90s, they were the ones that were running these labs out in Israel and bringing the ecstasy into Britain. And they're also behind the acid. I know people like to think, oh, acid isn't that bad as psychedelics. Jews were behind that. Timothy Leary, all these freaks in America that were promoting LSD, that Jews were behind a lot of it. Because they know that again, it's just going to degrade and make the white man depraved once he's hooked on these drugs or when he's out of his head. It's much better to avoid all of that and try and keep your life clean and be happy with what you've got instead of always trying to go for more. That's my thoughts on it. Don't know if you want to add any more to that, Brutus, before we finish.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a contentious issue. I mean, my opinion on marijuana is it should be legalized. I mean, I don't smoke it myself. I smoked it when I was a kid, but I can't really bash somebody for just having a spliff, at the weekend. Obviously, it becomes a problem if you smoke it all week long. And the thing is, like you say, it creates a criminal subculture. And I mean, my opinion, specifically about the marijuana, because there's obviously a strong political movement to legalize marijuana. My opinion is that, George Soros and the Jews and what have you, if they wanted it legalized, they would have had it legalized. My belief is that they keep it illegal so that you politicize, the hippies and the stoners and the dropouts and people that like to smoke it. You politicize them because that becomes the first issue that they want to fight for. They're like, hey man, it's not cool. just want to smoke some weed, man. And they get politicized and then they get pulled into the left wing. And it just becomes another issue for, you know, that captivates them. Of course, it creates a criminal subculture. It creates a lack of respect for the law because you're casually breaking the law. And all the problems that are associated with that. As far as hard drugs like heroin goes, should it be legalized? I can see the point that you're making. Yeah, buy the poppies instead of, buy the poppies, sell it to the medical industry. I mean, why not? Opium has been used as a medicine for thousands of years. It's always been used as a medicine. How is it that we can make it illegal? I never understood this. And I don't understand. Also, I don't know the answer to your question about the synthetic thing. Why can't we just have synthetic hair? I don't understand it at all. Maybe the natural stuff is better. I mean, natural usually is better. Opium has been used for thousands of years in medicine. Why not just legalize it? Why not give Afghanistan a great homegrown business? Give Vietnam a great homegrown business? Give Burma the same? They could all make loads of money selling opium. It's good for them. It's good for everybody. And we don't need to go to war and we don't need our soldiers to die. And we don't need to waste all this money blowing up their countries and radicalizing the Taliban and et cetera, and et cetera, et cetera.
That's the thing. There'd be none of it on the streets then. The people that did have a dependence issues with it, addiction issues, then they'd be treated medically. And you wouldn't get any more new addicts. And as you say, Afghanistan, Burma, Vietnam, Thailand, they would have this cash crop that was legally being sold to the medical industry. But what that does is it cuts the gangster out. So that's why they don't do it. It cuts the gangster out. So that's where you can see the link between these CIA and these intelligence agencies that are all tied up in the drug running. Why else do they keep these drugs illegal? Because of all the money that can be made from it. For the black market and the links that they then have to the, as you say, to the underclass, so they can stir them up, the antifas that are all involved in these drugs as well. That's that connection between the intelligence services and the anarchists and the antifas. Anyway, we've gone a little bit over time there, wandering off into subjects that we don't very often talk about, but I hope people have enjoyed what we have talked about today. I'll just remind people that we have got a Bitcoin wallet and we do rely on your donations to keep the radio station going. Thank you very much for coming on, Brutus.
In case you didn't know, Morgoth doesn't have his PayPal anymore, but he is on Patreon, so you can donate to him there.
Yeah, I also donate to Morgoth on Patreon. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more SS Britannia for you, and we do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.